Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Vanderbilt, another big win over the weekend. They take down Kentucky on Saturday on the road. Gets them to 4-2. We talked about it yesterday, Joe. I mean, the Georgia State loss still is confounding to me when it comes to Vanderbilt and what else they've done this year. They were right there against Missouri, probably should have won that game. So we legitimately could be talking about a 6-0 Vanderbilt team right now. Nonetheless, they are 4-2. And I, you know, thinking back to the preseason, I think their over under win total was 2.5. I think it was 2.5, maybe 3.5.
2.5 or 3.5.
I think I had them at 3. I think you may have them at 4 heading into the year. Well, they're clearly they're going to surpass that. They got Ball State coming up on Saturday. I believe they're 27-point favorites in that game. Then it's Texas, who's the number one team in the country, Auburn, South Carolina, on the road at LSU, and at home to close out the season against Tennessee. That's their schedule left. So at 4-2, Joe, I'm looking at their schedule right now, and I'm saying I think the postseason – nothing's ever a guarantee, but I'm feeling great about postseason play for Vanderbilt based on where they're at right now. My question is, how much damage do we think they can do down the stretch here? Texas, and I know they've taken down Alabama when Alabama was number one. Texas looks really darn good. That's going to be a tough task for Vanderbilt. But I look at the rest of these games. Auburn on the road, certainly a gettable game for Vanderbilt. South Carolina at home, that's certainly a winnable game for Vanderbilt. LSU on the road, we'll see. I mean, that's a tough place to play. There's no doubt about that. I know that they're the number 8 team in the country right now. I'm still not totally convinced how good they are, but I'm not going to rule Vanderbilt out in that game. And certainly with the way Tennessee's offense looks right now, I don't think you can rule Vanderbilt out of that game either. So my question is, how much damage do we think Vanderbilt can do coming down the stretch here, sitting here today at 4-2?
They could do some damage, without question. You know, you can go through that too, and it's not like, you know, maybe Hugh Freeze finally, you know, prepares a team for Diego Pavia, you know, perhaps.
Does he find a quarterback?
I mean, for whatever reason, there's that. I watch Auburn, and, like, at times they actually look like a pretty decent football team, you know. Shane Beamer, for whatever reason, has just had Vanderbilt's number. And then, you know, LSU. I mean, look, they also could, like, it's certainly still possible. It's on the table that they don't get to 6, okay?
Yes.
But I'm with you. I mean, I'm pretty confident the way that they're playing. Obviously, you got to get this one Saturday, and you got to get it convincingly. I will tell you, on the 26th, I was supposed to go to, like, I think Alabama Ole Miss, but it's like, no, actually, Vanderbilt, Texas would be the game. I'm like, yes! I can make that trip for Vanderbilt, Texas, which might be game day, by the way.
Could be.
I don't know. I don't know if it will be game day because, you know, the Texas 3 times in a row thing, because Texas, Georgia this week, you know.
Trying to see. I need to go see. I'll look at this right now. What other games are that weekend?
Yeah. But, like, I mean, that would be so awesome. And, again, that's if Texas handles Georgia, then that would be Vanderbilt's second opportunity at home to beat number one in the same season. And – look, I mean, Texas blew out Oklahoma, and their defense dominated the game. Oklahoma's bad. I don't – like, Texas is number one. But, like, remember early in the year when they went up to Michigan and won, it was like, oh, ooh, these guys. And they're very good, don't get me wrong. I mean, they keep getting running backs hurt, and they're like 7th running back as an All-American.
It's unbelievable, yeah.
They have great receivers. Ewers is a great player. But they're still not like this – juggernaut. There's nobody out there in college football this year, which I think is fun when that's the case. You know, it's some years it's not like that, some years it is. There's just no one to me that's like absolutely unbeatable.
Yeah.
So I think Vanderbilt can make that a game. I think, again, it's just like their offense has to execute at a high level and control the game just like they did at Kentucky. And they have to kind of stay, it's kind of like staying ahead of the, you know, just staying, it's like almost like on a drive in football. Stay ahead of the sticks, right?
Yeah.
And if you can control with your offense and put that pressure on the other team, and you find your way to a couple stops, you got a chance.
By the way, some of the other high profile games for the 26th, which is that weekend with Texas and Vanderbilt, Missouri, Alabama, LSU, Texas A&M, which right now is a good matchup. Here's a sneaky one that I think game day may take a look at. Notre Dame, Navy. Navy being 5-0.
Yeah. Right now. No, that's a good point because Navy is actually legit. And Navy has a legit chance to win that game. That's a good point. I wouldn't be surprised. But I'm rooting for Nashville. Too. I mean, another thing, seriously, is like, I mean, logistically, because again, like next year is going to be really cool at Vanderbilt with when it's all done. But right now, logistically, game day with all the construction actually would be a bit of a chore.
Put the desk on a crane over there?
They might have to go to the Harry Potter dorm. Actually be cool from the top of that dorm.
It would be pretty awesome. Lance on the text line says, if Vandy hits 6 wins, Clark Lee needs to win SEC Coach of the Year. I think
he's almost a lock already.
He's pretty much getting there right now.
But I'm with you. They get to a bowl game, yes, he's SEC Coach of the Year. Because Coach of the Year awards, by and large, are who exceeded expectations the most. Who was the surprise?
Right.
Not, wow, Sark, dominant year. Now, I will say, if Texas comes in and just wins the SEC in year one,
maybe like, need to get consideration.
Yeah, he'd need to. Yeah, like if they go undefeated, then he'd need to get some consideration. But yeah, I'd say Clark Lee has a great chance at it.
Wes in Clarksville says, "What if Vandy beats another number one team? Has that been done by anyone before? A team beating two different number one teams in the same year?"
That is a great question. I don't know the answer.
I'm sure that it probably has. I mean, at some point, like if you're good enough, you beat a number one team maybe in the regular season, and then let's say in the playoff or in the bowl game or something, you beat another one.
Yeah.
It's probably been done. But I bet the list isn't that long simply because how often does a team play two different number one teams in the same year?
Exactly.
It can't happen very often.
Just having the opportunity has got to be rare. Another thing that came up, and this is I noticed this because Teresa Walker retweeted it, but it was a Vanderbilt account. So they went back through and – at least since 1960, at least. This is the first time Vanderbilt has played consecutive SEC games without trailing at all in either game.
That's
at
pretty
least
wild.
Since 1960. I mean, who knows? I mean, you may go back to like before they were in the SEC. I mean, I have no idea, but that's quite a stat.
Yeah.
And the fact that, again, it's also just pretty amazing that they played Alabama and Kentucky on the road and they never trailed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what it is. It's get ahead with your offense. Put the pressure on the other team. Just keep taking it to them with that offense, which is elite. Like the offense is, when it's functioning, it's really good. And then, you know, your defense, they just find a way.
I would love to know how many of these games, they got 6 games left. Can you make an argument that they'll be favored to win 3 of them? Like they're certainly favored against Ball State. They're not going to be favored against Texas. Will they be favored against Auburn on the road?
I doubt it.
Will they be favored against South Carolina at home?
Maybe. Depending on how South Carolina plays between now and then, that's possible.
So there's 2 right there. I think I don't know what the Vanderbilt Auburn line is. I don't know if there's a line right now. I think that one's going to be pretty close to them being a favorite.
Yeah, no, which is wild. I mean,
they won't be against LSU and they won't be against Tennessee, but still.
But like the Tennessee game. Just a couple weeks ago, I would have said, I don't know, what's that line? Vols by 31.5?
Right.
And now it's like, Vols by 5.5?
Well, look, Tennessee will be the favorite in that game. Right now.
We might have ourselves a game right there.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to say, I'm excited to see, you know, just Pavia just alone, just – the way he attacks these games, you know, and brings like he totally, no. I mean, it's wild to think one person could do so much, but like they have this total attitude, like, yeah, we're gonna win this game that I've never seen from Vanderbilt football.
By the way, our statistician Nick Kieser, 2008 Florida taking down number one Alabama, which was in the SEC title game, and then the national championship game against Oklahoma.
Okay, and that's the only one, Kieser, but you know that. Okay, so that's one we found. Okay. Good find.
I'm sure it's happened a few times. But again, like how many teams actually have the opportunity to do that?
Play 2 different ones.
Right.
Yeah.
Not very often. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll take more of your thoughts on Vanderbilt, their path to the postseason. Plus, the Nashville Predators still in search of win number 1 on the regular season. They'll try to get it tonight. If they don't, what's the concern level? We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Tune in to 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville tonight for MTSU football. Little Tuesday night football. Blue Raiders taking on Kennesaw State at Floyd Stadium. Pregame starts at 5:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock. MTSU football coverage on 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville, presented by Sloan's Motorcycle ATV. Also, Preds fans, don't miss tomorrow night's Smashville Live at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs at 6 o'clock. See your Preds star players up close and personal. Your chance to get autographs and pictures as well. Tomorrow's guest will be Philip Tomasino and Yuso Parsonen. That's tomorrow night at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs and on your home of the Nashville Predators, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines. I got one texter asking, why is Vanderbilt not ranked? They're 4-2. They've taken down Alabama. Why is Vanderbilt not ranked? We talked about this briefly yesterday, Joe. To answer the question, I don't know. Vanderbilt should be ranked. The AP poll many times has several things that I find confounding. We talked about some of those yesterday. But, you know, Vanderbilt, knowing that the Georgia State loss is probably a big part of this, like that's one that is really a killer in this discussion. I still think they should be ranked at 4-2. I think they've proven enough that they're a top 25 team.
Yeah. Well, the media is closer than the coaches. The AP poll, they are the next team. So Navy got 84 points. Vanderbilt got 68. So technically they're 26.
Yep.
In the coaches' poll, coaches' disrespect, they would be 26, 27, 28, 29. They'd be 30th in the coaches' poll. So
what's wrong with these coaches?
I don't know. They got they're rolling with Nebraska and – I mean, Michigan, I mean, you know, coaches have Michigan 22. Michigan is not very good, not a top 25 caliber team. But, you know, Vanderbilt beat Ball State, and you get a little bit of chaos in front of you. And you, actually, I think Illinois and Michigan play, so one of them will lose. So you got a chance to get in those rankings. But, yeah, look, also, they could very easily be top 7. Right? I mean,
you're 6-0. Like if you finish
6-0 with a win over Bama,
yeah,
and a win at Missouri and a win at Kentucky,
yeah,
I mean you'd be the top 5,
maybe. Yeah,
that's how they are a couple plays away from being absolutely the shocking story in sports, not just college football. So, Jim from Springfield says 2017 Auburn beat number 1 Alabama and number 1 Georgia. For some reason, I don't remember that. I'm not doubting you, Jim, but. Why am I blanking on that?
Yeah, I don't remember that either. I need to look up. I mean, again, I'm not doubting Jim. I don't have Auburn's personal history memorized.
I get my years mixed up.
I know 2014 when they made the national championship game, or 13, whatever that was, they beat Georgia and Alabama on two miracle plays, like back to back.
Was that what 2014 or 2015?
2013, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
When they played Jameis in the national championship game,
right?
2017, Auburn lost to Georgia by 21 points. So I don't think that one. That must have been the SEC title game. So you're right. They beat Georgia the regular season game, November the 11th.
Yes.
Beat Alabama to close it out, and then lost to Georgia in the SEC title
game. Yeah, and in fact, that was 2 weeks apart. Yeah. You know, that Georgia, then Louisiana Monroe, then Alabama. So number one, beat them both. That's pretty good. But then, yeah, Georgia got them. And then that was the team. That's right. That's the team that lost to UCF and
yep.
allowed UCF to be national champs,
yes.
of their own making.
Yes. Joe, the Nashville Predators back in action tonight at Bridgestone Arena, taking on the Seattle Kraken. Preds are 0-2 to start the season. So in search for win number one coming up tonight. Now, this is kind of the discussion. You know, we got a couple of questions yesterday about, you know, how are you guys, why didn't you talk about the Predators over the weekend? It's like, well, the football team is in total disarray.
Can we complain about that for a
17-game season? The Predators are 2 games into an 82-game season. And just to kind of highlight that a little bit, the Preds are 0-2. So there's no doubt about it. They need to get a win. The results need to start to come. And if they don't get one tonight, I will start to be like, all right, time to get going here if you're them. Colorado's 0-3. Edmonton's 0-3. I'm just saying it's pretty early. Pretty early at this point. Edmonton is 0-3, and they've looked horrible at this point. I think we would all agree that Edmonton's pretty darn good.
Yeah, they're going to just repeat last year.
They got a minus 12 goal differential in 3 games. The Oilers are getting crushed out there.
Remember, I mean, a year ago, after a month, it was like, well, they're the most disappointing team in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Colorado's 0-3. And look, I think Colorado's got some actual legitimate problems starting in goal. But again, it's 3 games into an 82-game season. Preds are 2 games in. Now, having said that, you know, we've talked about the Novak stuff, right? And I said before the year, I don't care what Tommy Novak does in the regular season, they have to go get a centerman. Well, we're two games into the year. Novak made it basically two periods of the first game on a line with Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault, and then the plug got pulled on that. He got moved down. Sissons got moved up. That's how they started last game. And it looks like tonight, based on practice yesterday, that they're already moving Stamkos to the middle,
yeah.
And he's playing with Cole Smith and Jonathan Marchessault. So some
early, of course, just as we all predicted.
The early season line tinkering going on. These were the lines at practice yesterday, and Max Herz put these out there, which generated a lot of reaction. Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist, which you would expect.
Yeah.
Cole Smith, Stamkos, Marchessault.
Sure.
Jankowski, Novak, Evangelista, Parson, and Sissons, McCarron, with Tomasino already finding a nice spot on the bench.
Yep.
2 weeks in. Now, we'll see if that's what they go with tonight. You know, Brunette didn't fully commit to that yesterday after practice, but some early season line shuffling going on.
Philip, have a seat. Colton, how about that fourth line? What do you think, buddy? A little more comfortable there.
By the way,
Cole Smith, get up here.
We need you to move up. We need you to play with Stamkos and Marchessault.
I'm fascinated by that move.
I am too.
You could say, yeah, it's like a Rubik's Cube or something. Or just like take all these names and put them together in any way you think might be possible. I don't think I'm at any point putting Cole Smith on a line with that Stamkos is centering with Marchessault. I don't know.
Well,
but why the heck not?
I think the general idea is, like, Cole Smith is a very good skater. He skates very well. He's a straight-line player, and you're trying to, I guess, muck some things up and create room for Stamkos and Marchessault. So I get that part of it. However, I'm a little skeptical that Cole Smith playing on a line with Steven Stamkos may put him a little bit over his skis. We'll see what happens there. But what I think this does is, and go back and look at the ice time from last game. You know, Brunette talked about in game one with Novak specifically. Didn't have his legs going early in the game. Felt like the shuffle kind of switched things up there. Last game, Brunette talked about how he didn't have some guys going in the game. And I go back and you look. Tomasino had like 12 minutes ice time, which included some power play time, by the way. So 5-on-5, not very much. Same thing with Novak and Evangelista. So some of the younger guys in the lineup right now, I think, clearly are not satisfying Andrew Brunette with the way they're playing. And look, you know, people were freaking out yesterday about Tomasino sitting. I would say this. In terms of, like, the pecking order right now, the forward group, Parson and Set the first two games, it was always Parson and Tomasino at the bottom of the totem pole until proven otherwise. So I don't know that I would freak out yet about the lineup decisions by game three. I think you got to give it some time to kind of play itself out here. But they need a win tonight. There's no doubt about that.
I mean, Texter says, Cole freaking Smith on the second line? I'm going to throw up. Why? Can't you just have some fun with this? What if this is a stroke of genius? I'm very interested to see how it works out. People get so mad about Cole Smith.
Well, people get mad about line combinations too.
Yes.
It's early in the season. Regardless of who's playing with him, I'm interested to see Stamkos down the middle. Like, what does that look like at this stage in his career? You know, the idea is to get him the puck a little bit more often. And, you know, you naturally have the puck more when you're playing center. So, I'm interested to see how that goes.
I still just feel like I want him shooting. But
yeah, you know. And look, you know, he played center for the majority of his career. It didn't stop him from scoring goals.
Sure,
so, he knows
sure.
what to do there. But I'm really interested to see how this goes. But all of this highlights exactly what I'm talking about before the season. It's not a maybe they need to go do it. They have to go find another centerman by the trade deadline. And we can sit here and dress it up all they want. They have to go find another one by the deadline.
And you know, maybe it'll end up being something like early in that 17-18 season when they went out and got Turris, you know, in a month into the year. I mean, it could be something like that too. Cam says, why can't we put an offensive guy on the wing with Stammer like Evangelista? Yeah. I do think that, look, Novak is a better player when he's playing with Evangelista, right?
Yeah.
I think I'd roll with that a little bit.
Also, I mean, Andrew Brunette has shuffled up lines in both games so far. So, you know, until the Cole-Smith combination makes it through more than like a period and a half, I don't know that I'd get overly worked up about it. It could change pretty quickly tonight. I mean, you may change by the morning skate.
We do have Preds pick to click, right?
We do.
I'm taking Cole Smith. Are I'm you? Telling you right now. I'm is calling
a,
my shot.
Is that a prompt?
Hat trick. Cole Smith hat trick, sure.
Hey. I mean, you're up. You're already up in the competition, thanks to our hockey guru, Paul Kuharsky.
House money. He's better at making hockey picks than coming up with football storylines this week.
7-3-7-1-0-2-5. We'll take more of your thoughts on the Preds. A couple more thoughts to get to there. We will get back into the Titans coming up next as well. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad at 7:45. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, Derek Mason at Twin Peaks in Cool Springs this Sunday for the pregame show, 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans' Week 7 matchup against the Bills, give you the latest updates before the game. Pregame show presented by Parma Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, Sloan's Motorcycle ATV, and award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad. Broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up here in just a few minutes. Get back into the Titans coming up here as well. By the way, get into a little trade talk coming up at 8 o'clock. So looking forward to that.
Yes, it's that time.
It is.
It's that time of life for the Titans.
Getting to be that time. By the way, the Cole Smith slander still going on the text line right now. Got a texture that says, we get mad because he sucks.
God, just, I mean.
Cole Smith.
No one
let
ever.
Let me put it to you this way. Cole Smith does not suck, first off. He has a very specific role that they ask him to play. He plays it really well. Now, does that role and should that role include a top six spot with Steven Stamkos? Probably not. So I'll be the first one to tell you that. But in the role that he has been playing, he's been fine. He's a good penalty killer. That fourth line has been fine.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to him playing instead of like a Tomasino, right? I mean, which again, I understand. You want your first round picks to be so good that of course they're in the lineup, and even that they have a prominent spot in the lineup. Yeah. And what can I tell you about Tomasino? It's just not what the reality is. He made the team.
He did. Oh, look, I thought the first game against Dallas. I thought he did some nice things. Like Tomasino, we all know this. This is a big year for him. It's a big year for Parsonen. If those guys don't figure it out this year, they will not be here. Like they will move on from those guys after this year if it doesn't work out. So there's still, I think we get caught up in the immediacy of it, and it's something that, you know, I've got to check myself too when it comes to hockey. Hockey's a long marathon, man. Like it's a long season, and I'm just saying I would not overreact to decisions being made by game three. You know, there's a lot of newness that they're trying to work together. That, you know, they clearly have not found someone yet that Brunet feels comfortable playing with Stamkos and Marchessault. Now, you could say, well, how do you know Tommy Novak played two periods with him? I get it. Like I would assume at some point that he's going to get another opportunity with that line.
Yeah, I thought that might get a little more run.
I thought it might get a little bit more run. I would assume at some point they'll go back to that and see what it looks like. But, I also thought all along there will be different points this year where they're giving a look to Stamkos down the middle. I think it makes sense, you know, to see what he can still do there at his age. And, look, I know that, you know, after the way they played last year and the fact that they're still together, it seems unfathomable at some point that the O'Reilly-Forsberg-Nyquist line is going to get broken up. I would almost guarantee you there's going to be at some point this year where they play Forsberg, Stamkos, and Marchessault together.
Sure.
Just to see what it looks like. I think you'd be crazy not to.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen at some point.
Well, even like, don't you? I mean, I would think that might not even be long if you're down in the third period of a game.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. I think the way their lineup is constructed, they've got options. And that's a good thing to have. Like, we talked about it on defense too, right? Like, yeah, right now Brady Shea technically is playing with Luke Shen. But I guarantee you tonight, if they're in a situation where they need to go get a goal or they're in a situation maybe even late in the game where they're trying to protect the lead, you will see Josi and Shea together. It's going to happen. Like Brunette is not afraid to situationally kind of tinker his lineup a little bit, which I think is smart.
Yeah. Robin Rockfell says, big mistake with the Preds not playing them more in the preseason. Didn't play their top players at the last couple preseason games. It's a common theme across multiple sports.
First off, preseason in hockey is way too long. Like, I've talked with players about this and former players. The general consensus is you need about three games. Get your timing back, kind of get your you know, take a hit or two. You don't see a whole lot of hitting in the preseason, except for this year when all the stars are getting hurt in the preseason. But like, I don't know if the preseason is the answer. I do think though, when you have Stamkos and Marchessault and some big name players trying to fit into your lineup, we talked about this. Like, it could take a while. Like, it could take a, you know, 10, 15, 20 games where they really start to settle in. And I think that's both 5-on-5. Like, right now, the power play percentage-wise, not very good for the Predators right now. Now, I think they've created some good looks, but I think at some point, the talent on that thing is too much where, you know, the more you stick with it, the more chemistry they build, it's going to be productive at some point. It's 82-game season. You got to be patient. Yeah. Now, having said that, be nice for them to go get a win tonight.
Yeah, you just don't want to be in a hole, right? And you, as you pointed out, you got some teams in the West already scuffling. But, yeah, you just want to be able to scratch out some wins, and this is where you are built. Like, this is where you hope that you can lean on your goalie in some games and win a 2-1 game.
Which, by the way.
Things like that.
By the way, he played Saturday. I thought he looked pretty good. Saros did. So, you know, when you don't score any goals in the game, you're not helping your goalie very much. So, I thought Saros looked good on Saturday coming back from the injury. And the bottom line is also this. Like, I know that they've lost the first two games, and it's easy for panic to start to set in. They outshot Dallas by a pretty significant margin, had a lot of good looks in the third period of that game. They had great looks the other night. Cam Talbot played out of his mind for Detroit. And I know at some point, like, the, oh my gosh, they're playing a hot goalie and they're getting chances and not scoring, that gets old. But I would much rather early in the season be in that spot than just getting totally blown off the ice. They're definitely not getting blown off the ice right now. Like, they had the better of the looks against Detroit. If you do that in an 82-game season, over the long haul, you're going to like the results of that.
Yeah. So, don't freak out unless they lose the next game. Then
if they lose tonight, you have my permission to freak out.
Then it's over, basically.
Well, I will say, though, if they lose tonight and they're 0-3, and they have, I don't know what Edmonton's schedule looks like this week other than they're here on Thursday. That could be an interesting early season matchup if both teams are not won a game by the time Thursday rolls around.
That's wild with Edmonton. And Saros, you know, that's the thing with Saros. It's he obviously, it's pretty consistent with Saros, is slow starter. Maybe the other night was an indication that that's not going to be the case
maybe
with him. That's just how some people are, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, is when you see the puck start to go in for Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault, which it will. I mean, those guys have been proven players in this league for a long time. Then I think you're going to see kind of that layered offensive approach that they're looking for, right? In a perfect world, I think they'd love to keep the O'Reilly line together and then find a match, whether it's Novak or somebody else, to play with Stamkos and Marchessault. Because last year, the Forsberg line was great, but when the playoffs come around and the other team is only worried about one line, that's not a good spot to be in the playoffs. Like, you have to have multiple lines that are threatening. And really, that's what the regular season is about. Obviously, you have to win enough games to get to the playoffs. But I think it's a building process to get to the point that by the time the playoffs come around, you feel like you're threatening on multiple lines, and you just give people problems to deal with matchup-wise. That's all the NHL playoffs are about, is matchups.
So who are they going to trade for? Who'd you throw out there? You got Granlund coming back?
I mean, Granlund is an unrestricted free agent. I mean, look, so is John Tavares. Now, my dream is dead because up until, like, right before the season, Crosby was coming in on an expiring contract, and I was like, man. Can you imagine telling a Predators fan like 5 years ago, by the way, you're going to have Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, and Sidney Crosby on your team.
On a line.
On a line together. So that one's dead. But, I mean, look, it's early in the season. There's always teams that underachieve. Hey, look, maybe the Preds will be one of them. I don't know. But there's always teams that underachieve, players that become available as the season goes on here. There's a lot of unrestricted free agents next year that are interesting. And that's where you get into some of the rental players at the deadline. They will have options at the trade deadline should they decide to pursue it. And look, we'll see what happens. That's also where the Johansson thing comes into effect. If Johansson loses his appeal and the Predators get cleared up for $4 million for money, well, that helps you a lot at the trade deadline to go get somebody.
Yeah. Was he limping last night when he was walking around? Did he have a little limp?
I don't know. Is he out golfing?
You can golf if you're hurt, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that'll be – that's I mean, that's a big deal. $4
million. Vingan texted me and said, Zegras. Go get Zegras. Maybe.
We talked about him before.
Talked about him all offseason.
Yeah. Boy, how fun would that be?
It would be fun. Maybe you should make – but, again, people get mad at me all the time about Tommy Novak. I'm telling you. I like him. I like some of the skill sets that he brings to the table. I don't think he's a legitimate top six player. So when you don't have a legitimate top six player, particularly in the playoff time, to play with Stamkos, you got to go get somebody. And I think Barry Trotz, I don't know if he agrees with me about Novak, but I think he at least deep down realizes that the chances of them having to go get somebody to play center at the deadline are pretty high. I think you got to know that heading into the year.
Look, he has some physicality limitations, especially in playoff hockey. But when you talk about layered scoring, that's why I like that line as your third line, too, to sneak in a couple goals here, you know. But you just got to find that 2C.
Tommy Novak is a third-line center I feel really good about. Yeah. Tommy Novak is a second-line center I don't feel great about heading into the playoffs. That's just me. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
They said you guys were distracted. They said, Eric, you weren't going to be able to get enough rest. Everybody, the emotions were going to be too much last week to be able to bounce back and get another win.
That ain't us. That ain't us. Coach Lee has a specific script for us to follow. Coach Keel's, you know, hard on us, and then up front, Coach K, you don't let the union slip at all.
Our house, we show you how to play some SEC ball. It don't matter where you're from. You don't know what ball we play. Alabama, you're next.
Diego Pavia for Heisman, man. Diego Pavia for Heisman.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joseph, the floor is yours without further ado.
Thank you. So I was going to do this anyway. I got to credit my editor. And, of course, Vanderbilt graduate Mitch Light, who brought this point up as we were talking. He's like, boy, notice how Vanderbilt did every possible interview last week, and then they won. I mean, let's go to last week. I mean, like, I saw Pavia on Jim Rome.
Yep.
Dan Patrick. He's on, like, First Take or something. Like, Johnny Manziel surprises him. In an interview, he does every interview. Clark Lee, every interview. Whoever else they ask for. And what happened? Here's another part of this, and this is not he's not the point. But yesterday, driving home from or driving back here from Bloomington, Indiana, I was like, oh, I got to hear some Stilly today. So I put my app in, listen to Stilly, and as soon as I play, he's talking about how. Of course, he flipped out about all the interviews. Of course, and Pavia had a podcast, and I don't know. He still had some fake story about some coach said that like Pavia got mad because he called him the Hawk Tua. I don't even know.
No, I've seen the evidence on that one. It's legit.
It's legit that someone told Pavia that and he got mad.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's funny. But still, the point is, of course, you know, still, and he's not far from alone. But this whole idea, and it's just a coaching. This is a coaching belief, which is such BS. You know, this, oh, if we do these interviews and we talk about it, oh, it's just going to be a – no. Vanderbilt, credit to them. Credit to Clark Lee and everybody over there. Soak in the moment. Go do the interviews. Get all of the benefits of doing something like this for your program. And then when it's time to work, go to practice and practice.
Yeah.
Go to school. Like
multitask
again. So if you're doing a 10-minute interview, how is that any more detrimental than like playing video games in your dorm room? But somehow this is just oh no. Some of these coaches bunker up and you know you can't talk to the players, can't talk to the assistants. Yeah, I'm kind of looking at you, Nick Saban. And hey, you know what? Nick Saban's way certainly worked. But you know, Nick Saban, you know, he over time. started locking down on these things because people would say stuff that he didn't like. And he's like, well, I'm just going to muzzle as many people as possible. But he and all these coaches use the excuse of, well, we can't have, you know, Saban talks about the rat poison, but a lot of these coaches talk about, and not just talk about, but their actions are trying to keep it down. Let's not have people talk. Let's not have distractions. BS. Vanderbilt is exhibit A, that you can do all these things and you can still come out and handle your business. So I hope that other coaches took note of that. I know that some will bunker up no matter what, but like you can't deny what just happened here. They went on the road as, what were they, underdogs of how much?
13.5.
Yeah, 2 touchdown underdogs, and went and controlled a game and didn't trail one time and just kicked their butt. So thank you, Vanderbilt, for showing everyone what a farce that whole idea is.
I got to raise my hand. I was concerned about it last week. I was. I was concerned about the rat poison for Vanderbilt heading into the game. Maybe too much rat poison, but they handled it very well. Now, I will say, largely agree with your point. I think we have seen examples of teams that have kind of bought into that a little bit, and it has affected them. Vanderbilt showed the maturity where it did not affect them. I appreciate that.
So I'm not saying that a team can't get cocky or overlook an opponent, but what I am saying is, like, there are some coaches who in that moment would be like, no, this is not the week that we talk about this stuff. Yep. We're just going to lock it down. No. Doing things like, you know, talking about your program, talking about the game or whatever, I mean, having fun for a few minutes. I mean, when it all adds up to, how much Pavia's time was taken up by media stuff last week?
Not a ton.
We added it all together, you know? I mean, a segment, when we have a guest on here, it's about 11 minutes of your time, right?
Yeah.
10, 11 minutes of your time. So he did a few interviews, and he apparently did a podcast. And then Stilly, what?
Did he start a podcast?
Talking about? Is that what it was?
I don't know.
I thought that's what Jared said yesterday.
I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't mind listening to the Diego Pavia podcast. He's an entertaining guy.
The Pavcast would be pretty good. I would be down with that too. But again, it's – so, yes, of course, teams can get caught up in – they think they're better than they are, stuff like that, right? But just the process of when you have a big moment for your program, you know, going through some interviews about it, like, how is that a problem?
Well, I said that last week. They should lean into it. Vanderbilt should lean into it, and they did. Now, by the end of the week, it was a natural question, and it was more than just the interviews, but it was how do you handle success, right? Like, we talked about that with Vanderbilt. How do you handle success? Because number one, you've not had a ton of it to speak of, and number two, we did see earlier in the season where they got off to a good start. They took down Virginia Tech, they throttled Alcorn State at home, and then they went on the road to Georgia State and lost the game, and you thought, all right, well, it's just the same old Vanderbilt. You lost a game that you had no business losing, and can you handle that moving forward? So I think that was kind of a fair question heading into last week's game, and to their credit, they handled it great. Like I thought they were totally in control of that game Saturday night against Kentucky. So I don't know if that's a lesson learned from earlier in the season or if it's just the way that it all played out that way and they've just continually gotten better as a football team. But I did think that that was a question that I was curious to see whether or not they can answer to the affirmative, and they did on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, and maybe, you know, that's the thing. You're a pretty significant underdog on the road against an SEC team that kicked your butt in your home stadium a year ago, right?
Yep.
Versus – everyone just assumes you're going to go beat this other team. And that's right. Human nature, and that's – but I promise you the Georgia State loss had nothing to do with an interview with the media.
No. I would promise you that's probably the case.
Stilley also said something – I guess Stephen A. Smith had some mayo. He said something about Will Levis. Yeah, how do you – we're rewarding me. So this is – Stilley tried to take – like, oh, see, I told you I was right. Yes. Yes, the mayo commercials are why Levis is struggling this year. That's totally – totally great call.
Well, right now I'm just glad that he's done it because
exactly. Good
job.
Yeah,
it may not last very long.
Jump on that. Absolutely.
I don't know how many more commercial opportunities you keep playing football the way you are right now that you're going to get.
Mayo checks, keep cashing. Stilly, mayo takes continue to suck.
Hey, which take do you have a problem with more? The Stilly take on the mayo stuff or Kuharsky saying that the Titans must be out based on the game plan that they had on Levis?
I seriously cannot wait to yell at Kuharsky. It's so dumb.
I can't wait either.
Like, I just, again, the only out he has is if this is, like, he has information internally that they are out on him, then okay. Then it's kind of like you're trying to find signs of something that you have been told.
Right.
But if this is just, what I think it is just like speculation. It's just, what? It's so dumb.
I'm here for it. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Tennessee Titans coming up next. A trade opportunity that, according to Joe Rexroad, the Titans must consider. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.